Good evening. I'm John.
And I'm April.
And you are with us on A Cup of Madness. Today we are going to be discussing collectibles and antiques.
Should be a fascinating show.
Welcome to it.
So for tonight's show, we're looking at a collectible as any object that's regarded as being of value or interest to the person who's collecting. Not necessarily monetarily valuable and not necessarily an antique, but we'll get into more detail about that in a little while. We're also going to be referring to manufactured collectibles, and those are items that are made specifically for people to collect. Special editions, limited editions, are manufactured collectibles. It's something that has been made as a marketing incentive to try to get you to buy more or buy it again, even though you already have three copies. So we'll refer to that a couple of times as well. Our special guest today is Tiffany Brown, owner of the fantastic shop here on Gallatin Square, a Daisy a Day vintage and antique marketplace. Tiffany and her husband James pride themselves in keeping their shop fun and unique. 90% or more of what they carry in their charming store is true vintage, antique, or handmade. Thank you for joining us today, Tiffany.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, tell us, what is the difference between antique and vintage?
Antique is considered to be quite a bit older than vintage. There's a lot of debate on the exact number of years. Some say 100 or more is antique, and 20 or more is vintage. But that's putting us at like 1999 was vintage, and
wow,
we don't want to think about that.
No, that was way too recent. Well, if something is really old, does that make it valuable?
Not necessarily. There are some really old things that are just junk that, you know. And then, of course, there are some very rare old things. I think it depends on how much it was made, how often you could find it, and how often you can still find it.
That makes sense. Kind of supply and demand type thing. How do you determine what's worth putting in your shop?
Well, that's a tough question, I guess.
It's a very eclectic shop.
So. It is an eclectic shop, and we have about 40 vendors, so they make a lot of the choices. But we pride ourselves on choosing vendors that will bring something different to the table, each one of them. So when we're looking for things, we're looking for very unique things that you're not going to find at every antique and vintage store. We want something different, something fun, just things that are not your common glassware, clear piece, you know, just something different. So, but
and
we have
certainly
a huge
works.
Variety of of what that is. And people are looking for all different kinds of things. So we like to have what, you know, what you're looking for.
You do, and you have a vast variety. And it goes quickly. If there's anything that you love, you need to buy it then, or it's not going to be there tomorrow.
It does. Our turnover is huge.
Are there any specific historic periods that you're drawn to?
Ooh, I love 40s and 50s myself.
Just the fun.
Yeah, the fun, the bright colors, the mid-century, the thin legs on the furniture and or tapered legs, and that's definitely my favorite.
That's definitely a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that is frequently brought in that you have to tell people it's not actually worth anything at all?
Sadly, yes. A couple of things. China dolls are not as valuable as they were at one time, and a lot of people collected those. So a lot of people have inherited those collections. And unfortunately, they just don't. There are a few that will still bring good money, but for the most part, they're just not as valuable as they were, at least not in our store. Mm-hmm. And china sets. It seems like everyone inherited a china set, and everyone has one to get rid of because they don't need it or want it, and it's just not something that the millennials, I guess you could say, are looking for. You know, it's not something people register for now in their weddings. And It's just there's a lot of sets floating around looking for a home.
Mm-hmm. What about things like baseball cards or Beanie Babies or anything like that? At this point, that's two decades old.
It is.
Baseball even
and
older.
And it's the same way. I mean, there's one every now and then, you know, even one Beanie Baby every now and then that's worth a lot. And a few, you know, there's a handful of baseball cards still worth a fortune. But for the most part, it's just, it's the same thing. The interesting thing about Beanie Babies is a lot of church groups now take them on mission trips and give them out. So they...
It's a wonderful idea.
They do buy them, they just don't pay very much for them.
Well, have to keep that in mind.
Yes.
It seems everyone at some point has that antique roadshow fantasy, mm-hmm. Where they find that treasure in the attic and it's worth some large sum. If someone thinks that they have found something possibly valuable, how do they find out? And then how do they sell it?
There are lots of ways to sell it. Really doing your own research is best. And the internet's at your fingertips. You know, there's every website, every possible auction site, everything that you can imagine is just right there. Just by Googling what you have, you can find so much information. Mm-hmm. We look on eBay a lot at sold listings, and then auction houses, auction sites, if for the higher quality antiques.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point of what they actually sold as, rather
yes,
than
not what they're
asking.
Listed for. Yes.
There might be a Beanie Baby or something listed for $1,000, mm-hmm. but if nobody's paying it, then it's not
right.
worth that.
Right.
Makes sense. Well, as we mentioned, in your shop, you have a vast collection of just all sorts of fun and unique items. What are some of the hot ticket items, things that sell almost immediately upon coming in?
It's so across the board. we usually sell, tobacco baskets usually sell quickly.
Really? What do people use those for?
Just decorating now. At one time they were used in the warehouses to move tobacco. Those usually sell quickly. Certain types of furniture will go pretty quickly. Any kind of old advertising seems to be really hot.
That's a fun piece of nostalgia, though.
Mm-hmm. Metal signs. It could be advertising on anything. Specifically, Gallatin items will go very quickly.
We have a strong local history
here.
Yes. For sure.
Yes.
Well, just for fun, what's one of the strangest things you've had come along?
Ooh, my favorite strange thing that's come along is a letter opener from a life insurance company that had just started offering life insurance to women. Up until that point, they had only offered it to men, and so on this very nice metal letter opener, their advertisement was that they now offered life insurance to both sexes. And I had to keep it because I thought, this is the funniest thing.
That's a fantastic
one. I mean, now we don't even think about that, but,
no, but that's
it probably wasn't that many years ago that that was created.
That's a great point. And yes, that would be really hilarious to have as your letter opener.
Yeah.
Wow, that would be a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have any helpful tips to pass along to the avid collector?
Just always be on the lookout for something that makes you happy. Like, it doesn't have to make sense. You don't even have to know what it's used for. But if you like it and it makes you happy and it fits in your home, you
Good
know.
Good point.
Just buy it and love it and pass it on.
That's excellent advice. I love that. Well, I know you have a huge estate sale coming up, and you are constantly busy, so I won't use up any more of your time today, but thank you so much for coming by today.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure.
That interview was very, very insightful. I've been to their store several times, and they have the Castle Grayskull I want so bad.
Really they won't have it for long.
I know.
Anything that is in that store does not last. It's gone quickly.
Especially now that I just let it out of the bag that Grayskull's there. It's okay. As long as it goes to a good home, it's all I care about. It deserves it. It deserves it.
Speaking of toys, I'm sure you've got quite a few in your your closet still.
No.
Or you wish you had.
Yes.
toys are one of those big, hot topic collectibles that we seem to have the nostalgia for, and even whenever we parted with them long ago, we want to have them back, and we wish we had them, and we'll pay quite large sums of money to get them back.
I kept all mine. I love them. They're fantastic.
Yeah, I have to admit, there is a closet full of boxes of toys at my house that one day, someday, maybe we might actually part with.
But. Right, right. Yeah. Well, with toy collections, one thing I always struggled with on mine were in-package or out-of-package value.
Ah, yes.
Play or collect.
What's the point of having a toy if you can't play with it?
Money.
Yes, but tell that to a child.
True. As a child, I usually bought two of everything, almost, when I could find it. But, yeah, I did some research recently over X-Men action figures, which I collected. And back in the day, Iceman, the original Iceman without the blue tint, was like $50 or $100. He was the most sought-after figure.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's ranging 25, which still isn't bad considering they were $5 a pop. But Deadpool, of all action figures, and he was actually quite rare back then, in the package is about $50. The highest I saw was $162, but they had a price cut, $49.95.
Yeah. You've always got to keep in mind, just because somebody's asking for a certain amount does not mean they're actually getting that amount, especially whenever you're researching online.
That's true. That's true. That's why I went to several sites to make sure I got that right on there. Because, yeah, the Disney Black Diamond cases, well, that's a whole other thing.
Ooh, that could be a whole episode.
Yeah. So, you know, it wouldn't be complete without play sets as well. I mean, I had the Ghostbusters Firehouse. I had Batcave. I mean, you need the vehicles, because really, how's Batman getting around with all of his buddies? Okay, it was mostly Batman and the Batmobile, but still. And I think the most expensive one that any one of my friends ever purchased was the General Flag, which was the aircraft carrier from G.I. Joe. It's like $1,000. And he had it in the box, unassembled.
Mm.
It was amazing. Things like 6 foot long, just you could put jets on the carrier deck, and it was amazing. Just love that thing. So yeah, nothing's really complete without that. And yeah,
well, and there is something to be said about complete collections with the toys. I mean, if you have the Firehouse with the Ghostbusters car, and you have all the characters and all their pieces, it might be worth a little bit more than just a small little Vinkman.
I have them all.
Of course you do. So does my husband. And therein lies the other problem, is just because you have it in the box and basically brand new or very little played with, does not necessarily mean it's worth something, because it's all about supply and demand.
True.
And it depends on how many are out there for sale right now as to whether or not it's worth much.
You're correct. And when it comes to collections with comics, for instance, the 90s was a very harsh teacher in those manufactured limited edition comics, because in the 90s is the first time that they realized that all the old issues, like the first appearance of Superman or Batman or Captain America, all of those were worth a gazillion dollars and thousands upon thousands and so on and so forth. And some of them still are. But they started cranking out limited edition this with like 5 different covers, and everybody went out there and now thinking they're going to be worth money.
Uh-huh.
And then the bubble burst. So the point of the story, boys and girls, is to sell it when it's hot, not after the bubble burst.
Don't save it for a rainy day.
No. Part with it when people are throwing out cash for it like mad.
It's interesting because as a nation, we went through a time of, with especially the Great Depression era, where people were hoarding and holding on to literally anything and everything they had and reusing things that should not be reused.
Yeah.
Over and over again, simply because they didn't have anything or they had so little. And so the generation that grew up within that and the children of the parents who went through that, they continued to have that clinging to everything we own mentality, and so they held on to everything. And then their kids came along, and so they kind of started to hold on to a few things here and there. But throughout the years, the products became more and more disposable, including the toys. And then we hit the 1960s to about the 1990s were the major years for the manufacturers to make the contemporary collectibles or the manufactured collectibles. That was the sweet spot whenever the manufacturing company said, you know what, we can make a lot of money if we just tell people that these things are limited edition or that they're special, and that if they buy them now and hold on to them, that they'll make money later.
Oh, naturally.
So, of course, everybody bought into it, and so there's so many people who bought into these things for investment purposes that it really became very little demand for any of it, even to this point, even today. And so the market values are often very low for a lot of the things that were originally sold as, you know, they're going to be priceless. These are going to be really worth quite a bit. And so that whole 60s to 90s, it depends on what it is, but we still have a higher price put on it than it may actually have.
That's true. I honestly think of the marketers as magicians, because while you did have a bazillion first issue different copies of limited editions, this, that, and the other, on toys and comics, while they had you looking at one hand, they had another hand behind their back, and they might make one of a certain type of action figure. And only people who worked at the stores or were collectors themselves could go in and tell you, you don't want any of these that they're pushing on you. You want, I don't know, a Luke Skywalker with brown hair because it was a painting mess up. And those details are the important things. And especially in the 80s, they had tie-ins for movies, television, and it even crept up in the 2000s with video games. 70s to 80s, you had Star Wars. And in the 90s, they actually made Terminator action figures. It didn't matter how...
I remember those.
how violent the movie was. They made an action figure for it. Made a cartoon and a Rambo. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah. And, well, you can find Deadpool toys in the toy aisle.
Exactly.
Current day.
And I think Todd McFarlane's company gave a lot of credence to that because, of course, he designed his own Spawn action figures, but he started designing horror movie icons and so on and so forth. But getting back on to television, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and G.I. Joe were some of the biggest cartoons that had action figure tie-ins. Everything you saw on screen, you could walk down the toy aisle and you could buy, or at least beg your parents for. And then video games caught up with it. Mario's always had action figures, of course, and then Sonic, Halo had various action figures over the years, depending on the game. And they know that if they can hook you with a good story or a child, you have that emotional bond to it.
Mm-hmm.
The money's going to come from somewhere. Mama, daddy, you. So.
Yeah. Well, and as a general rule of thumb, anything that was ever mass marketed as a collectible, they really aren't worth much because so many were made. And because everyone has saved them and they've all bought into it. And so their popularity has just sapped their value. And that's the case with a lot of those toys that were marketed as such.
Many of which occupy that closet you spoke of.
Yes. Well, and that cause actually has a name, official term for it. It's where people tend to put a higher value on their best collectibles because they have a vested interest in them, whether it be a strong emotional attachment. Or just because they feel like it's something more important, or because they've been told that it's a special collectible, they assume that because they've put this higher value on it that everyone else does too.
Yes.
And so because they own it, it's got to be worth quite a bit. That's actually called the endowment effect. Throughout the years, there have been several collecting crazes. Perhaps one of the most preposterous and asinine being the Beanie Baby craze of two decades ago. And it does. You laugh. It sounds like a funny joke. Now that we look back on it, on just the insanely long lines out of stores and at McDonald's, people buying Happy Meals and throwing away the food just so that they could have this little toy that came in the Happy Meal to collect these cute little pellet-filled stuffed animals.
Did people fight over those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I was thinking
they were
so.
It would get ugly sometimes. And we look back and we laugh about how people genuinely thought these little cuties, they were going to make them rich. They were their retirement investment. They were going to send their kids off to college. the beanie mania of the 90s touched everyone in some way, shape, or form. Everyone knew someone who was collecting.
Beanie Fun Go.
Yes. Well, and it was a brilliant strategy by the TY company, the tie company. They deliberately drove the madness by deliberately making their items scarce. And they would retire ones, and then they would reveal ones. And they made deliberate mistakes just to leak it out there. They drove the madness, and it made them a lot of money. They did a fantastic job with it. There are still millions of people out there holding on to these cutesy little things, still hoping that someday they might be worth something. So yes, John, whenever you're 90, maybe you can get, $30 for that Beanie Baby instead of the $1 that you could possibly get for now.
Tell the 74-year-old, hey, young feller, come over here. It's my black market of Beanie Babies.
Maybe your great-great-grandchildren might be able to to make a little something.
I left something for you. Closet full of Beanie Babies. Don't laugh.
They would be played with in a heartbeat. Well, there are still a very small handful that could still possibly be worth large amounts. The vast, vast majority of those things are worth about $1 if you can find a buyer for them. I've seen claw machines that have them just dumped in there because they're cheap. They're cheaper than claw machine toys, which are so cheaply made. It's ridiculous.
And claw machines can't even pick up big stuff, so good luck.
And if you look online, there's still diehard fans hoping for the 90s nostalgia that you talk about. Maybe that'll bring back the popularity. And in some ways, maybe it does. There are still people who hold on to that. They are, I never did get that Princess Di Bear. Maybe I should
step over to my van. Beanie Babies galore. You pick what you want. Everything's $50.
Yeah. Good luck with that one. Now, personally, I know those things will never make me rich, but I really enjoyed the fun of the hunt and the memories that I made in the Beanie Baby craze. I fully admit I was right there with everybody. I was not pushing and fighting, but I was right there. I went to auction house every week, and I bid on beanies left and right. And who's going to bid against a cute little girl? Come on. The memories I made with my grandfather in hunting down those little things are just such a wonderful bonding experience that is priceless to me. So, yes, the cutesy little stuffed animals, they're still cute. I still have a couple hundred. But I know they're not going to make me money. They're there because of the emotional attachment, because of the bonding experience I had with my grandfather. And that was something with the 90s. I think that's part of why it also, that madness ensued, was the bonding experience between parents and their children. It was something to do. It was something fun to do. They could go out and they could research these things together and see if they already have this one or if they don't. There was enough of a influx in the budget at the time. People had a little bit more spending money. And so, yeah, let's go buy these things and have fun with it. And so it was just a family experience. And I think that's also part of what drove this insanity.
My obsession to collect and view movies. For me, much as the Beanie Babies were for you, this is my hunt. And recently I've just reflected and self-assessed, and it is almost completely about the hunt now. It's about finding what I don't have or completing my collections. I barely have the time to watch them all anymore, and I can't help myself. I'm on the hunt for them. Special features are my Achilles heel in that regard. On select VHS tapes, you had to sit and wait until the credits rolled, and you might get a glimpse of the director talking to you or some form of what we would come to know as special features. I remember Terminator 2's alternate ending was on television once of scenes you didn't see in a special primetime program, and you got to see these deleted scenes to these big movies. And it wasn't a common feature until DVDs came about. And at first, DVDs were just basic. Here, look at the digital format, view the movie. then they started adding special features, and I was like, oh my goodness. And some of these turned out to be just as entertaining as the movie itself. The stories behind it were hilarious and just outrageous. And then they came out with the Criterion Collections. What Criterion Collection films are, when the Criterion Collection people use state-of-the-art restoration and original special features added to their stuff, and their stuff only has a finite amount of copies out there, so it goes away. It goes out of print.
So not only is it special edition, it's also limited edition.
Yes. And
makes it a doubleheader.
And they mean it. I think what somebody was charging for every single Criterion Collection, which has been around since 1984, every single version was like $7,000.
True. Some That's of them, insane. Who would pay that much for a movie?
Criterion Collection people.
Well, who would pay that much for a stuffed animal?
Everybody's got that Achilles heel. I don't have the Criterion one, but movies, yes. I do like nice versions of movies packed with features.
Now, how many movies do you have, and then you go and buy another one because it's a special edition? Or buy another one because it's got some great packaging? Or happen to have another one? I know personally, at some point, we have had at least three copies of one particular movie on our shelf because of all the extra things. We eventually had to purge and whittle down, but it's one of those things that I know gets you. The packaging especially. There are some things it's like, I don't need this. I don't want this, but man, I gotta have it. Like, that is just so cool.
I have bought one movie out of probably thousands in my collection. One movie twice on accident, and that was Spaceballs.
That's a fantastic one to have too.
It is. It is. I was not disappointed in myself so much once I realized I did that. I was like, oh, it's Spaceballs. It's okay. Have a backup.
And does it have the cartoon special feature on it?
I don't know. I'm going to have to go and evaluate that.
Because that's a hilarious series as well.
I'm going to go and check that out now, because one of them, I was like, well, I'll watch it, you know. This one, I kind of sided with the one that had the artwork on it, but I digress. But yeah.
You judged it by its cover.
I did, because I'm a sucker for that Indiana Jones Star Wars-ish artwork. And if it's like photographs of John Candy, that's perfectly fine. John Candy and Bill Pullman, I would much rather have the drawings. It's just much, much nicer. And sorry. Anyways. Moving along, yes, I'm a cover snob occasionally, but by and large, I think I've only rebought films to replace full screen versions. Back when I had the square tube TVs, mm-hmm. I will replace them with widescreen versions because I do want to see more of the full picture.
Well, that makes sense, at least.
Yeah, I will do that. Anniversary editions, depending on the movie, it may have like a retrospective, and they will share, you know, things that maybe there wasn't a special features loaded disc with that movie and I had to buy a basic copy. So I'll go back and maybe buy an anniversary one here and there.
Yeah. The Princess Bride had a really great anniversary one because they actually went back and interviewed the people who were the actors and actresses about their experiences of this, you know, 30 years later. And it was actually highly entertaining. So I could see that.
And some cult classics get a labor of love treatment. You know where I'm headed with this.
Oh, yes, I know where you're going
where
with
this. Where am I going with this?
Maximum Overdrive.
There you go. That's it. Maximum Overdrive. Yes, yes, yes. Maximum Overdrive.
Such an awful movie, John.
Terrible movie, but fans loved it. And don't underestimate the power of your kids. The filmmakers made it for adults, and the adults rejected it. But there was an entire generation of kids with their faces glued to that screen. And they came up, and they're the ones who show the love for the film. So whenever I see a special edition, albeit independently made and very cheesy, special features ridden Blu-ray of Maximum Overdrive, you bet I'm there. Just I'm shoving cash into that cash receiver as fast as I can at self-checkout. I love it.
So this is what's wrong with you. You watch Maximum Overdrive your entire childhood.
I wouldn't call it wrong. But yeah, it was pretty great, actually. And then, while I disagree with this coercive measure by various companies, the makers of the formats, started off with DVD, Blu-ray combos, and then you have Blu-ray 4K combos. And what they do is they'll shift all the special features you want to see over to the more expensive, newer one.
Mm-hmm.
And or a certain cut of a film that you want to see. And it coerces you into buying that next generation platform, and I hate that. Another fascinating collection, and this one is strictly for the people with big wallets.
Deep pockets.
Deep pockets, yes. It is car collecting. Jay Leno. I envy that man's garage. It is so awesome.
And those who wish they had it.
Yes, yes. There are lots of people who do wish they had it. But if you're driven by nostalgia, desire, and appreciation, if those three factors are there for automobiles, go to Scottsdale, Arizona to Barrett Jackson Auto Auction and see what they have to offer. You're bound to find something that you like from all eras. But most importantly, like we said, you must have disposable income. Those are toys for later on in life for most people. Maybe it's a muscle car you had when you were in your, you know, teens or 20s, and then you got rid of it. You haven't seen it in a while. Oh, hey, I got money. It requires lots of money to get one. You get it.
When you're ready to graduate from the matchbox, you go on to the big box.
Like everything that is collectible, there are tons of things around until there aren't. And then they become scarce. Maybe a wave of nostalgia hits at the same time. There you go. The perfect storm for getting lots of money for your collection.
Are antique cars really... I know they're a passion project for sure. The emotional tie-in, the social aspect with going to car shows and such. Are they actually a good investment, though?
It really just depends. 2018 still had, I think, in the top 15, the Model T was still up there. So car enthusiasts are car enthusiasts, and like I said, your appreciation, if you can expand your appreciation for it, and if you get into the nuts and bolts of them, I think it helps out a lot. You will start to appreciate what different cars offer, and you may find yourself, even in the 2000s, going to maybe an auto auction and finding a Model T because you want that piece of automobile history. You may be in love with a certain decade or time period. You may romanticize that. Maybe you were, like I said, a teen, you know, driving around in a Chevelle, and when you get older, you want it back.
True, and that's actually a great point. That's another fantastic reason for having a collection or collecting something, whether it be cars or quilts or antiques in general,
yeah.
Is a desire to preserve the past, the good old days, or... just as a memory of how things were.
Yeah.
I have a, if you have a quilt that your great-great-grandmother that you never knew made, but she made it from flour bags, there's something special there, even if you never knew her.
Yes.
And there's something special about preserving the past. So I could see that, especially with cars, preserving something from the past.
And a lot of the people who go and they purchase these cars, they... were young maybe when these cars were, you know, brand new and they had one as a teen, or maybe they always wanted one as a teen. And then life moved along, the models and years went by, they amassed retirement and, you know, had families and paid off their house, and maybe now they have a staggering amount of money from their career. And then they want to go back and find what they never had, or maybe what they did have.
Getting that dream car, fulfilling that life goal.
Yeah.
Why do we collect things? Why do we collect some of these? You talk about with the movies, sometimes because it's a limited edition, and this is the only way you could possibly view it, is if you had it in this particular format, or something like that. I mentioned with the Beanie Babies, it was more of the thrill of the quest or the chase. It was kind of a challenge and a bonding experience. So those were reasons for us with different things. Sometimes you just do it because it's something to do, and it gives you some way to expand your social life. I mean, you can go to swap meets or car shows or any number of things where other people who are like-minded, who like the same stuff, you can carry conversations with them. And it's a lot easier to just randomly walk up to somebody that you see is advertising something that they like and have that you can make a connection with and actually talk to them rather than, you know, how's the weather today? Yeah, I know.
Right,
It makes it far more interesting, which also I think makes your personality a little bit more interesting. I think that might be one of the reasons why so many people collect so many different things. It kind of makes them a little, it gives them a distinction somehow. It adds to their personality. In addition to just, you know, the satisfaction of arranging or owning or completing something, you know, having the satisfaction of having that limited edition DVD or Blu-ray or whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think you just collect something because you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. I'm sorry, Mom, but I don't need to be rained down with teddy bears every time you see me. It's one of those, I had teddy bears, way too many teddy bears growing up, just because every time my mom saw something cute and cuddly, she bought it for me. And I don't need all that, but I never wanted to hurt her feelings and tell her, I don't want any more bears, please no. So I think sometimes you just develop this collection mentality simply because you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings.
Yeah, it's a collection connection.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's some way, something to connect over, and you continue it on. Of course, with your toys, you're triggering pleasant and fond memories of your own past toys, or even ticket stubs. Like when you went to go see Star Wars, or when you went to go see whatever movie. A lot of people still have those ticket stubs of when they went to go see those shows, and that was a big deal. Of course, investments. People want to invest in things, and sometimes it does work out. We've poked fun at that quite a bit, but sometimes it does genuinely work out. I think it's really funny whenever you have somebody who collects stuff simply because of an appreciation of irony or as a joke, or maybe a joke gone too far. You know, like my grandmother has a collection of pigs, and it's because one time she said she liked pigs, or she had pigs growing up on a farm, and suddenly her entire house is covered in pigs. And she has bought very little of that. Pretty much it's just been gifted to her as a collection because, oh, well, she likes pigs, so we're going to give her pigs.
Yeah.
And it's also a way to express, you know, loyalty to a brand or to a team or to something that you really are a fandom, something you have a strong attachment to. But honestly, I think it all just boils down to we collect stuff simply because we like them. It's for the pure enjoyment of it. It's fun.
Yeah.
And yes, there are psychologists and there are, you know,
the toys
so
that
many
made us.
Yes. There's so many things that go on and on about why. But honestly, when it all comes down to the end of the day, if you bought something and it makes you happy, good for you.